Hi, everyone, and welcome to the DevMar Debugged podcast, where experts from top companies all over the world share their insights on everything developer marketing. Today, we're talking to Martin Jiret, CEO of CodeMagic. So hi, Martin. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Theresa.
So our topic for this episode is all about the best features for enterprise plan customers. But before we really get into it, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you've done in your career to lead you to where you are today?
I used to be a chemist. I was studying organic chemistry in the UK. But I one day discovered that I don't look up to a lot of chemists. Chemistry is fun, but I was afraid if I go down this path, then I may not be happy. So I decided to change and went into kind of this startup world with software developers and apps. And it was quite fun. I did my first startup, which was a mobile application. Did not work out. And then I joined corporate consulting. Boring. And then I went back to startups, and now I'm building CodeMagic.
So many things, like so different, starting as a chemist to where you are. Wow. So can you also tell me a little bit about CodeMagic and how the company came to be and what you do?
So with CodeMagic, I am not the founder of the company. So I started off as a business development person. The company itself, we used to be a mobile development agency. And that was back in 2010, 2012. And back in that day, it was kind of the first products that offered some kind of cloud infrastructure for mobile developers or DevOps people started to come around. So Jenkins was becoming more and more popular. And Travis, for example, which was a continuous integration and delivery service from Germany, started to come around. So we at the time launched a similar product as well, which was a continuous integration and delivery service similar to Travis, but we did it for mobile developers. And CodeMagic is like a second generation or third generation of our products. So we launched it in 2018 in collaboration with Google when they came out with Flutter, which was a mobile development SDK. So we were the CI/CD partner for Flutter developers.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No, thanks for that. And so, as I mentioned, we were talking about enterprise plans. So, you know, let's dig into that. For someone who might be on the fence about creating one, what would you say would be the main benefits of having it to offer?
You know, this saying that 90% of your revenue comes from 10% of your customers. When you are small, then you often think that it is a... sometimes like, I don't know, tear in the universe, or it is an anomaly that shouldn't exist, that we have this one guy that pays a lot of money. It's true. The bigger you get, there will be more and more of those guys. So you can either decide to ignore them or try to make an effort to help them use your product.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And is that how your own enterprise plan at CodeMagic came about? Was that why?
No, I think when I joined, I didn't have a lot of experience, but I was very eager, and I saw all these other tools had enterprise plan, and I thought I was doing business development and let's create the enterprise page. So that's the reality of it, is that you just created something that said enterprise page, and we put the price tag on it, and said like, okay, that's our enterprise plan now. And in the beginning, it didn't work. Like nobody contacted us. And that's literally all we did. We said enterprise plan, CodeMagic product starts at $6,000 a year, contact us. And but over time, you do get some people reaching out. And that was the surprising thing. And then that's when it becomes a little more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So then after that, what did you do to kind of, you thought, oh, you know, this is working somewhat, maybe not too well, but what can we do to explore this a little bit more and make it work? What next steps did you take?
I think that in the beginning we were trying to how do I say this? If you're getting requests in, it is a very, very strong indicator that a person wants to buy your product. So the first thing we were trying to do, or what I was trying to do, is to just close those deals. So whoever reached out to us, I was trying to close this deal. And that was basically all I did. And then later I hired because I don't have an engineering background, then I hired an engineer who also was interested in doing this kind of a customer engineering or sales. And then we worked together on trying to close those deals that are coming in. So, and this was, it's more complicated than you might think. It's not as simple as like a person reaching out saying, I want to buy your product. It gets quite tricky. And so what we did was we were trying to build like easier onboarding docs for those enterprise customers, because they had usually some complicated setup or something and they didn't have a lot of time to configure everything, because they said like, okay, we got this 2 weeks, go ahead and try and see if you can adopt this product. So a lot of our efforts were in the team were based on how can we close those incoming leads. So that was I think the bulk of the work.
Quite curious about that, actually. So is it you provide this ongoing support then when people obviously, you know, want to adopt your product? So do you help them during that process, and is that how it works?
Yeah, I think that's the one kind of benefit, like a good and a bad thing about this enterprise plan, that the good thing is that you get to learn a lot about the customer, because you have a human touch with them. So if they reach out to you, they say that they're interested and they know exactly what problem they have. That's another good thing about the enterprise plan customer, is that they spend some time thinking about the product specs, what they need to solve. Or if they're switching from something, then they know exactly why they're switching or what they're looking for. And so the good thing is that it gives us very good customer insights. But the bad thing is that you're spending time on one customer when they can just read the docs and self-service themselves. So that's the bad part.
Yeah.
And then in the end, like sometimes it may happen that, you know, you spend so much time on this one customer and then they end up not buying the enterprise plan, which is this expensive one, but they just go ahead and buy the self-service plan, which costs like half the money and even less than that. But they use this free onboarding service, but in the end end up not buying the expensive enterprise plan.
Oh, right. Okay. So I see there's quite a lot, a bit of a balance there then, just trying to juggle everything. And yeah, I know, I understand that. And I guess that kind of brings me as well to the features of the plan itself. So, or, you know, the process of building one. So I suppose you have to have all that in mind. You have to think of the client when you're creating a plan. So what would you say would be the main thing that people should have on their plans?
I think this is, I wrote an article about this as well. This is my first personal blog article. And I think the motivation for describing enterprise plan features in the way that I do is from this previous problem. That you get customers reaching out wanting an enterprise plan, but in reality they don't need it. So they still use the pay-as-you-go plan or some other self-serve plans what might be available. So how do you protect yourself against that? How do you make sure that you are targeting the right buyer or you're targeting the right end user? And this is why I think that the enterprise plan is mostly a way to buy the product, nothing else. If they cannot use a company credit card, they need to buy some enterprise plan. And that is what I wanted to highlight in this enterprise page. And what I think that you should talk about in your enterprise plan features, be it you can offer them some specific service level agreement, whether you can support the resellers, whether you can onboard to a vendor registration platform, something, whether you can fill in security questionnaires, All of these sound like things you hate and you never want to do, but you'll be surprised how much people are willing to pay for just these really, really basic things that just require a human touch. And that's kind of the features that I would highlight. Because if you're looking at the product, you're not looking, you've already done the proof of concept in a way. You already know what you're looking for in most cases, you know, with our customers at least. So the only cases when they're buying the enterprise plan is that they're convinced of the product and they just cannot use the card. So they need to who do I contact in order to register this company, or who do I contact to fill in the security questionnaire? And then they look at the enterprise page, and that's where you can highlight what services can you offer to help the customer buy your product.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you're saying about the human touch. Have you noticed that if once you start offering that sort of, you know, I'm here to help, that it is, we experience a bit more success, or people are more willing to purchase a product, or even go talking to, you know, the person who's responsible for buying a product once they have that human touch?
But we haven't tried it, actually. We haven't mentioned human touch anywhere on the enterprise plan page, but if just thinking back, like, that's at the end of the day what they need is someone from our side who is a human. But we've never tried to like message it that way. What we've tried to do is instead try to think like, what is the task that the buyer needs to complete? So does he need a quote? Does he need an invoice? Does he need bank transfer? Does he need something like that? Like, where can I provide this information to the buyer?
Yeah,
we do that on the enterprise page.
Yeah, anticipating their needs and kind of understanding what they're looking for. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
This is completely different to if you're selling the product. But if you're selling the product and putting it on the pricing page, then there you do your job of making sure that people know like how product is priced, how which features do they get. These types of things. But in the enterprise plan page, there we just say how you can buy it.
So. I guess that's what you said about the people already knowing what they're looking for once they get to that page. So yeah, that does make sense. So in that case, what would you say, like what other features should people have when they're trying to build their enterprise plan? What should they be thinking of adding in extra on top of what you mentioned?
I think that's it. Like, it's just as simple as putting a contact form. I think what people are maybe interested in is like, is this fear of selling enterprise plans. Because if you get a really, really big company trying to buy your product for 100 times more than your average customer is paying, like, let's say that somebody comes in and offers you $500,000 or $100,000 for a year. But they require you to build some custom product for them. Like, that is the typical case where I see that people are hesitant to start offering this plan. And I am as well. Like, I can never get your customer comes and says like, hey, can you guys build some special product for us in order for us to buy? It's really difficult to get this past the CTO to get the entire team on board as well, which is like, why are we building our product roadmap in the first place where we have this guy from nowhere coming and saying like they'll pay us $500K and then we'll build some features. I think that is like usually where people are saying don't offer enterprise plan because it's not good for you in the long run. And what I'm saying is that you shouldn't do that either, but the way you should think about the enterprise plan is that just use it as a payment method, basically. Use it as like an enterprise payment method.
Right.
This is what the enterprise plan is, yeah.
So is that why you kind of chose to take a little bit more of a satirical approach to the topic, as you mentioned in the page? Yeah.
So in the blog article, I mentioned a lot of these same features of an enterprise payment method. And it's really funny, or when you think about it, then people hate the like contract negotiations with lawyers from other sides, especially if you're a small startup. It seems like there is no value added in there. It seems like just a bureaucratic process that you just need to carry out in order to, at the end of the day, the developers are already using your product.
Right.
You're just trying to get it past this vendor onboarding stuff. And it seems so stupid. But people are willing to pay a lot of money for this. So you can ignore it, or you can listen to the buyer and try to make it better for them.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of truth in that, though, because if people are as already hesitant to build one, as you say, then having this, you know, satirical as it may be, I do think it provides quite a lot of useful information for people to, you know, think, oh, you know, this might be more on the admin side, but I do need to do this. So I do think there's quite a lot of value on having something like that. And yeah, would you like to explore on some of them, some of these topics you mentioned? For example, a remediation plan. Would you be willing to, you know, just talk a little bit more about what that is and why you included it?
Sure.
Yeah.
So in the article that I wrote, I say, what are the top 10 features of enterprise plan? And I think it was like 5 or 6 where I put the security questionnaires. And this is a thing that drives technical people crazy a lot of the times. At least I find it really difficult to get my CTO to sit down with me and go through the security questionnaire. It consists of hundreds or if not thousands of questions about, do you lock your office doors? Do you have video surveillance in place? Who has key card access? And we are a remote company, and like one of our senior backend engineers just lives on a boat in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Like he doesn't have servers in the boat room or something like this. Like how do you apply these like 2000 like 1980s rules to a modern world?
Right.
You fill them in. You do your best, you send it out, and some people will say no, so they will not buy it. And some people will say yes, it's fine, it's a tick in the box. And then there is a third group of people that say that the developers really want to buy this product, but the security questionnaire is not good enough. So your security is not up to the standard that we would need from our vendors. And there's a good reason for that, you know, that they have contractual obligations that they need to fulfill to their customers. So therefore, they need to apply similar standards to the vendors that they're trying to buy from. And here is where the remediation plan comes in. So if your security questionnaire is not up to standard for the buyer, but they still have a big motivation to use your product, so then you can offer something called the remediation plan, which is in between a priority feature request and building a product roadmap for a specific customer. An example of this can be that we didn't used to have a single sign-on, for example. So we offered only email login with a magic link, and we also offered this OAuth sign-ins by different Git providers. So then one of the hard requirements was that we can pass you through if you build a single sign-on functionality, and you also do an independent third-party penetration test of your security systems. And then they had like 8 other items as well. So now you get into this game of let's put the date when we should expect them, these items. So out of 10 items, we can guarantee that, okay, with this SSO thing and the independent security audit, we can get these done in the next 4 months. But the other 8 items, let's revisit in 6 months or 12 months. So this is something that you can do if you have a big enterprise buyer who really, really wants to use your product. So the remediation plan is something that you can do to help them buy your product by giving some leeway into the feature development, because at the end of the day, SSO and independent security audit, it requires very little resource from the development team. And then, but you can get potentially a bigger customer on board who, contrary to what a lot of people say, in our experience, enterprise customers require very little customer support. They generally know exactly what they're doing. compared to pay-as-you-go or freemium customers who require a majority of customer support. So doing this in order to get a bigger customer, I think it's worth the effort, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of like being flexible and able to adapt to the client's needs as well. Like if the product isn't exactly how we want, can you do this, this, and this, and kind of help? Yeah, no, that's really good, a good feature to or a good thing to add. And again, that's why I said that I think even with the satirical approach, there's quite a lot of really good points here. And speaking of the security questions, I'm just out of my own curiosity as well. You mentioned like thousands of them. Is this something that you have to actually sit down and come up with like one by one and think of everything? And wow, so that yes. takes quite a long time, doesn't yes. it? Yeah.
1,000 might be an exaggeration, but 400 and 200 is not. Mm. So it's realistic that you do get to 200, 400 questions per customer. And you would think that these are standard questions. Everybody has the same ones. They either follow one guide or another, but no. Mm. Everybody has different ones. Not completely different, but the devil is in the detail, you know, that you try to start documenting these answers so that you next person you hire can already look at the pre-existing answers and questions and maybe work way backwards from there. But there will always be questions that are new and always questions that require other people's input.
Right. So it's something, a long process, so I can understand. That is kind of difficult to get together with your CTO, as you said, and review everything and make sure everything's, it makes sense. Is this, as you mentioned, that people were, happy to go through them though, the, clients. So do you have you had to adapt them at any point or just say, unfortunately, you do have to do this, you have to fill this out, or people are just happy to do it? And,
I think clients hate it as well. I don't think they also like it.
So, just necessary, yeah.
I mean, think about it. You have a really, really long process before you can adopt a new tool. In many, many cases, you will avoid adopting new software technologies altogether. Because why would you? You cannot use it in your current client's work. It will take at least 3 months in order to get the software approved. Mm. Or at least 6 months or 9 months for that matter, depending on how long it is. But it will take a really, really long time before you can actually start using the software. So the developers are not motivated to do it. Mm. Maybe the team lead has something in place, like if they can push it through some quarterly meeting or something that, we should modernize our tool sets, So then the team lead is pushing it like, okay, I really want to use these guys. Like I like their product. So can we please get this across the board? Okay, here is 100 kilometers of obstacles that you have to go through. And if they're motivated, they will go through it. So I think it's a frustration with the status quo that causes the team leads to. Or at least the enterprise buyer to actually go through it and fill in these questionnaires, yeah.
Yeah, but fortunately it's necessary, yeah. So it makes sense. And another thing I found interesting is you mentioned account managers in your blog of something to consider when creating a plan. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
I haven't yet discovered a good reason or a good way to sell this account manager service. And this is partly on me that I haven't done the customer research enough, but if I'm comparing quotes from competitors, for example, in our field, then I can see that they explicitly highlight an account manager in their offer or in their quote when they make a quote to the customer. We haven't done that. And I think, one of the things that it affects, I think, is potentially the price. So if you explicitly say you can offer account manager services, then currently the only thing that I can see that it affects is the price. So if you can maybe offer a higher price if you have an account manager there. And whoever understands account manager service will understand it. Whoever doesn't understand it, they won't understand it. But in general, I find that you shouldn't try to kind of tier this enterprise plan. You should just put one price includes everything, if it makes sense. So you should make it make as little options there as possible, because it's just the less complicated you can make it, the better. Account managers in our company for our customers, what they do is remind them that they have a renewal coming up. So surprisingly, it's very difficult to automate this. you can try to send these emails, but sometimes it just requires to reach out from different places. And then this is like one thing account manager does is remind that they have a renewal coming up. Or then second thing they do is sometimes the customer has some product feedback to give. Having somebody in our company that listens to them and it says to them that, you know, I've relayed your feedback onto the development team. It is somewhat reassuring, and it may improve retention, but I haven't measured it personally.
No, that's a valid point. I do feel like with account managers, they can be there to provide, I guess, as well, like a liaison sort of role, you know, and a go-between, which can be quite helpful as well if you kind of want to focus on specific tasks or on a product, and then the account manager can take care of the rest. And yeah. And another thing you did mention just now was the price. And I was actually going to ask about that. The idea of just having one price only and coming up with the right one, I suppose. So how did you come up with yours? And I suppose you just answered that, you know, you just have one to make it easier. But how then do you get to that right one?
I think a similar question can be asked about non-enterprise plans as well. So how do you come up with any pricing? I guess that what's the difference, right, between this pay-as-you-go pricing and enterprise plan pricing? When I come up with pricing for product itself, so if we have this pay-as-you-go pricing or something, then it's a fairly straightforward maths equation. You do your gross margins and you calculate your retail price. How do you do that for enterprise plan? Well, you can't. It's mostly like a testing game in a way. You put the price where you're willing to do the work, in a way. Like, that's the honest truth how I come up with it, is that you put a price that is motivating enough for you to do the work. Because there is a lot of work, it shouldn't be underestimated. Some people refer to it as some enterprise tax that you put the add on top, but in reality, I think it has to do with like what is motivating for the team to do, and for the dev team as well, for that matter. Like, why would you pay more attention to one customer over another? Like, you should answer that question. So what, and is there a good formula for this? I haven't discovered one. If others know one, then I might be interested. But we started off with 6,000, and then I tried this tiered approach where 6,000 is minimum to get an invoice from us. And then we said like 12,000 is what is required for an SLA, for example, which is the service level agreement. And then what we discovered was that a lot of customers who said they wanted the 6,000 one still wanted the SLA or still wanted the security questionnaire. And so just to make things easier, we just said, okay, let's just put the higher price.
Okay.
Maybe similar to how the US put the drinking age limit, you know, each state has the different ages and then they just put the highest number in the end. Maybe it's like that. I don't know.
I find that's a very honest and refreshing approach, to be honest. Usually, I think people would say, oh, you know, you have to check the market, you know, see what's out there, kind of compare with competitors and all that. So I like the idea of, you know, the team needs to work on this. So they need to see the value as well. And no, that makes a lot of sense. I really, and I do like that approach of at the beginning that you said, you know, you had the 6,000, but then even with the higher one, people still wanted it, which also showcases the value of your product. So I guess the proof is in the pudding, as people say. So, yeah.
But that's the whole thing, isn't it? It doesn't really show the value of the product. The same guys that are buying it for 12,000, they're going to buy it for the other price as well. Like, for who is it valuable for? It's just this payment method that's valuable. Is that otherwise they couldn't buy it? I don't know. I'm still that's the odd part, which is that, you know, which is this, where is this satire in all of this? It's that you add bureaucracy to add value, which is sounds so silly, but for some reason, like, that's how money moves. I don't know why, but it is.
Yeah, no, I completely understand what you're saying. It's business, isn't it? So is there anything else you'd like to add or like to leave our listeners with in regards to the enterprise plan? Just anything you think they should have or anything they should think about?
I think the pricing one is an interesting question. Yeah, but need to experiment, and you'll be surprised. Test your limits. Yeah
it seems like it. You just go for it, and you know, you'll be surprised at the success. That's really good. So yeah, thank you for talking to me about this, and I do find it a very interesting topic.
You're welcome. Thanks very much. Yeah. Teresa,
thank you for tuning in to this episode of DevMar Debugged. If you want to hear more from professionals in the developer marketing world, subscribe to our podcast for more expert talks. See you on the next one.